right now as you're sitting here relaxed, your mind resting in your soul. Let yourself just totally embody, totally be embodied in your physical body. And you can notice I am totally present to my physical body. That's one statement. I'm totally present to my physical body. I am aware of my physical body. I am identified with my physical body. The I that I take to be me is in the form of my physical body. I am in the form of my physical body. When I say I am, I am, the me, comes in the form of this physical body. So two experiences have become one. I am the self-evident experience of my own being. I am. And the objectified experience of my physical body. I am aware of my physical body. The physical body enjoys consciousness. So I say, I am in my physical body. That the verse that we're working on today says, these physical bodies are subject to end, antavantaha. These physical bodies, my physical body, is subject to an end, to birth and death. But you are not. The physical bodies of the one who indwells the physical body. Those physical bodies are subject to death. But the one who indwells the physical body is nityaha. I am not subject to death, not subject to change, free from time. So when I sit here as the conscious being, as though indwelling this physical body, a distinction has to be made between me, the conscious being, the changeless one, the physical body, not away from me, not separate from me, but different from me in that it comes and goes. I need to differentiate my changeless being that I label as I am or me from the changing bodies. When I say I am in the form of this physical body, or you say I am the physical body, this me that is you, that you're referring to. When you say, I am the physical body, the self that is you, needs to be recognized as free from this physical body, which comes and goes. Myself, the conscious being. Because of which all of these experiences enjoy consciousness. Is stable, changeless, free as Sangaha. Yourself, the Atma, which is Brahman, is not a way to be experienced. Brahman is not a way from you to be experienced. Yourself, the one you take to be the body, needs to be recognized as Brahman. Free from all of the attributes falsely superimposed. home. Chant the first verse of Gita Dhyanam. Om Parathaya Pratipotitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantadami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini. So verse 18, chapter 2, verse 18. Antavanta ime dehaha Antavanta ime dehaha Nityasyokta sharirinaha Nityasyokta sharirinaha Anashino prameyasya Anashino prameyasya Tasmad yudhyasva bharata Tasmad yudhyasva bharata Sandhi Antavantaha Ime dehaha nityasya uktaha sharirinaha anashinaha aprameyasya tasmat yudhyasva bharata. Hey Bharata. Lord Krishna's addressing Arjuna. Hey Bharata. Antavantaha ime dehaha. These bodies, your body, the bodies of all of the people that you're facing, ready to fight, and all of the people that are on your side, all of these bodies, all of these people that you see, ime, these, dehaha, all of these bodies, antavantaha. Anta means end. Antavat means possessed of an end. Antavantaha is in the nominative plural. So, antavantaha ime dehaha. All of these bodies are possessed of an end, right? So, all of these bodies come to an end. By their nature, they're born and they die. That's their nature. There's nothing you can do about it. That's the idea. That's how it is. They're going to die. They were born and they're going to die. This body will die. Every sharira, every body is going to die. So that's a fact. So these bodies, which are going to die, these bodies belong to who? Whose bodies? Nityasya sharirinaha. The bodies of the sharira, shariri. Sharirin means the one who has a sharira, that in affix. It's like a vat affix. The one who has the body, the indweller, the one who's having the body, that one who has a body is nitya, nityasya sharirinaha. See? So genitive singular. That's interesting right there. First sentence. For this one shariri. For this one indweller, singular, right? All of these bodies have come to an end. For the one indweller of the body, who is Eka, or who is Nitya? Nitya, word Nitya means that which is free from time. Don't translate it as eternal. Free from time means not subject to past, present, or future. Timeless. So that which is timeless, free from time, means that which is constant, changeless. If something is not subject to time, It's not subject to change. So that's what we mean by nitya, that which is free from time. If it's free from time, then whatever that is, as it is, it is. As it is, it is. It doesn't have a past. It doesn't have a future. It is always the present. Whatever it is at the present is what it is. Free from time. So now, nityasya, genitive singular, nityasya sharirinaha. For the sharira, for the shariri, the indweller of the body, that one is nitya, free from time. So for that one who is timeless, all of these bodies are said, uktaha, are said to be possessed of an end. All of them come to an end. Okay? That's what's said, and that's what you know also. Right? So now, but for this shariri, who is nitya, free from time, this shariri, this indweller of the body, is anashinaha, not possessed of an end. Nashin means one who will come to an end, one who has an end, one who can be destroyed, okay? One who can perish, one who can be destroyed. Anashinaha, one who cannot be destroyed. Okay? So this self, this indweller, is anashinaha, indestructible, nityaha, free from time, and aprameyasya. Aprameyasya is a word in Swamiji's commentary. Spend so much time on this one word. Aprameyasya. That which cannot be known is not objectifiable. Cannot be known as an object, right? So we'll spend some time on that word. So he says, now, these bodies are said to come to an end. The bodies of who? Of the shariri, the indweller of the body, who is nitya, free from time, right? Who cannot be destroyed, right? And whose nature is non-objectifiable, cannot be objectified as an object. That's what's said. Tasmat, therefore, yudhyasva he bharata. Therefore, fight. Therefore, do your duty and fight. Okay. So we'll see that. That's the verse. Okay. Now, this verse is coming off of the previous verse. The whole previous verse was dealing with and establishing the relationship really between the creation and the body and the self as satyam and mitya. Okay, so anashitu tadviddi yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham aviyasyasya nakaschit kartum arhati. This is what leads into it. First line, where he says, know that purusha, know that atma, to be avinashi, indestructible, okay? By which, sarvamidam tatam, by which all of this, all that you're experiencing. So here, just remember, Arjuna is in the middle of the battlefield. Krishna is talking to him. There's everything here, all of this that you're experiencing, this universe, this jagat, you know, all of this is pervaded by that, right? By that atma, which itself is indestructible. Then he says, vinasham avyayasya asya. Nakaschit karatu marhati. No one is able to destroy that. No one is able to bring that atma to destruction. In other words, Arjuna, there's nothing that you can do here. You cannot destroy the atma. No one is able to destroy the atma. And Shankara in his bhasha says, not even Ishwara. Not even Ishwara can destroy the atma. Because the Atma is the very being of Ishwara. Ishwara himself can't do anything. Right? Even though Ishwara, if you look at the whole infinite Maya Upadi, the whole creation, which is subject to birth and death and continual change, and Ishwara as being Sarvajna, as being omniscient and all-powerful, should be able to do anything and can do anything within the creation, but can't do anything to that which is non-objectifiable and is his very being, the very being of the creation. What can be done? To understand this, really, again, we'll use the dream example. If you have a dream, and you are identified with the entire dream, right? And there's characters going along in the dream. Say you are the Ishwara of the dream. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in that dream. And say you're all-powerful in reference to the dream. Right? All kinds of things can happen, right? But what can happen to the self of the dream? What can happen to the one, the conscious being, from whom the dream has come? See what I'm saying? Within the dream itself, there's all birth and death and birth and death and birth and death. There's just continual destruction, actually. In the Katha Upanishad, they say, you know, Lord Death is the chutney of the creation. It's continually changing, continually being destroyed. So anything can happen there. And according to the laws of the creation, it's endless change. So that's Ishwara. So from that standpoint, there's birth and death, change and destruction. But now, say Ishwara was to come in with some huge sankalpa and wipe out part of the creation. Perhaps that could be possible. We can imagine it. Could imagine something like that. But then, say we ask, let Ishwara wipe out the Atma. Let Ishwara come in and wipe out the Atma. Wipe out the self. Wipe out Brahman. How can it be done? The self, which is non-objectifiable, which has no parts, which does not exist in time and space as an object, which is the very substrate being of space itself, which is the very self and the very being of every object in the creation, like the self of the table and the self of the space and the self of the rug and the self of the chair, the self of the lamp and myself and self of you and self of me, the very being of all that is, who's going to wipe out what? That is non-objectifiable. It's not an object that can be acted upon. It's the very substrate being of everything that is. And so that self, which is the self of Ishwara, and is equally the self of all beings, not even Ishwara can do anything about that. Because that self is something that is free and beyond time. Right? Non-objectifiable. So here, after having established that Atma by which all of this is pervaded, and then understanding, we went through this last week, understanding what we mean by pervaded. Pervaded like the pot, the clay pervades the pot. It's not pervaded like space pervades the room, because space is different than the objects in the room. Right? It's like how space pervades the pot, how the clay pervades the pot. How does the clay pervade the pot? As the clay pervades the pot, the Atma pervades this creation. This is a very interesting way of using pervasion, to pervade. Why do we use that? To show satyam mitya. This is how we show this relationship between satyam and mitya. We say, we use it as an example and we break down the example. The example is, we use it because of this. If I hold up to you a clay pot, there is a difference between the clay and the pot. Right? And at the same time, there's only clay there. See that? There's a difference. Because there's such a thing as a pot. And the difference is this. That the clay is satyam and the pot is mitya. What does that mean? Is that the clay is not destructible. The pot is destructible. The clay doesn't depend on the pot. The pot totally depends on the clay. The clay is not dependent for its being on the pot. The pot is dependent for its being on the clay. That's satyam mitya. It's a very important relationship because that is the relationship. That relationship is a non-relationship, right? It's an apparent relationship. So when I say, what we say, how the clay pervades the pot like that, the Atma pervades this creation, what are we really saying? That there's only Atma. There's only the Atma, there's only the self here, there is nothing but the self, but all of these objects that we experience and differentiate one object from another, right, We differentiate one object from another, and all of these objects are subject to change. True. They all are antavantaha. All of these objects that we experience are something that are subject to birth and death. The Atma is not subject to birth and death, right? So, I have to differentiate. I'm not subject to birth and death. The body is subject to birth and death. But I am the clay of the pot. My Atma, the self that I am, is this body. But this body is not the self. But I am this body. But I'm not only this body, I'm also the space, and I'm also the rug, and I'm also the table. But first, it's enough, and it takes us a long ways, if we can just be able to say this: I am this body is not me. Why is it important to say that? Because otherwise you're looking for a self. So we have to bring it home to what it actually is. Otherwise, you're looking to discover yourself, right? A superior self or a super self, you know?
A better one.
A self to be reached. A more subtle self. A different self. But that's not the vision of the Upanishad. That's not the vision to be gained. The vision to be gained is this, as we did in the meditation. You come to this teaching and you will say, I am this body. I am in the form of this body. That's who I am. Okay? So, you are correct. Partially. Right? You are correct that you are this body. That is the I that we're talking about. The me. Right? But the incorrect part is that you can't say the other side of it. You have to be able to say, I am this body, and this body is not me. If you can say that I am this body, and this body is not me, then you have been able to recognize the satya-mitya relationship. And you recognize that the very me that you take to be you right now, that is the me you are attached to as yourself, the me that makes a difference. Well, by that, a difference, what I mean by that is, you know, if somebody says, don't worry, you'll go to heaven, your thought will probably be, because you would have identification with yourself, the I is the physical body, so when somebody says, well, don't worry, you'll go to heaven, in your mind you go, yeah, they mean the soul, some soul goes to heaven. But who cares unless I go, right? If I go to heaven, then good, that's nice. That's great. I'm glad that I outlast this body and that I will go to heaven. You know? It's just like saying, you know, I am going to go to Salersburg over Christmas. I'm going to go to the ashram over Christmas. That's great, as long as I know that the I we're talking about is me. I am going to go. Not some soul other than me. Right? And so now, take like this. You say, the teaching says, you are infinite. You are free from death. You are changeless. Big deal. Great. But that only means something to me if I am changeless. See what I mean? It has to mean that I am changeless. That I am free from death. That I am the one that is the whole. The one that I take to be me. Not the one, that's wrong language. It's not the one that I take to be me. The one, it is the one that is me. You know, the one that is me. This is the thing. The one that is me is the one we're talking about. The you that you take to be yourself is Brahman. That is the one that is Nitya. The you that you take to be you right now, that one is Nitya. That one is timeless. That one is indestructible. That one is non-objectifiable obviously is an object. We'll see that. But the point is this. It is this me that we are talking about. Nobody else. But the problem is that this self, when I say I am, has been mistaken by my mind, mistakenly identified with this body and with my thoughts and with my mind and with my sense organs. And so when you say, I am, your mind just says it, that's the ahankara comes up, I am, it brings all this baggage with it. As though the I am is in the form of this, is in the form of the thoughts, is in the form of the moods, is in the form of the mind, is in the form of even the subtle body. All of these things that are actually prameya, these are all objectifiable objects of my experience that come and go. I have misidentified myself, which is not away from these things at all. That's why this misidentification takes place, because I'm not away from these things, right? Just like the clay is not away from the pot, right? So when the clay is not away from the pot, look at, think about this. Clay has no problem. Clay is just simple, pure clay, just being there clay. The pot has a problem. Okay. Right. The pot is saying, you know, if somebody pushes me off that shelf, you know, I'm going to crash. I feel myself getting old. You know? So the pot is starting to worry because it views itself as a possessed of an end. It knows that. Just like every one of us. Every one of us knows we are possessed of an end. We are going to die. Why do we know that? Well, because we see no exceptions. We don't see somebody floating around who's not subject to death. You know, and you're a physical body, I'm a physical body. Oh, too bad. Because physical bodies, by their nature, are subject to growing old and death. We all know it. Right? The mind. We all know from our own personal experience that the mind is subject to change. It doesn't make any difference how much you would like to hold on to that happy thought. It makes no difference. The mind, by its nature, is subject to change. Right? And then when you start thinking about it, you become grateful for that, because what if it wasn't? You know, what if it wasn't? But all of these things that we experience that are actually coming and going and coming and going and coming and going, we take ourselves to be that. The mind is the one that has the problem, actually. That's why I'm bringing up this idea of the pot. It's not the clay's problem, it's the pot's problem. It's not the problem of awareness, right? Awareness illumines the mind. Awareness is not thinking. Awareness illumines the thoughts. Awareness is free, right? Awareness illumines the body. The body is growing old, not awareness, right? The mind is sad, not awareness. I illumine the sad mind, right? I light it up. And I light up the happy mind, too. I light up whatever's there. I am the light. I am the consciousness. Right? So everything is lit because of me. I am the clay of the pot. I'm the light of the body. I'm the light of the every perception that I have. And I'm the changeless light. Think about this. It doesn't make any difference what your world of experience is. It's lit up. It can be a happy, beautiful experience. It can be a wretched experience. It can be a horrible experience. It can be a beautiful experience. It makes no difference. It's lit. Not only is it lit, I'm there. We forget that. Doesn't matter what the experience is. They all have one thing in common. I'm there. And it is lit up. The good, I'm there lighting it up. The good experience goes, the bad experience comes, the good experience goes, the bad experience, good experience, bad experience, 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 experience. I'm there. I'm not going anywhere. That's the satyam. That's the self. It doesn't move. It doesn't change. It's nitya. It's free from time. Who is free from time? me, not somebody else, not some special experience. I am the special experience. There is no more. There is no more special experience than my being. And we're looking all around for it. And then we discover, you know, this, that the sought is hidden in the seeker. This word isn't quite right. We say it like this, the sought, what you're seeking. Say you're a spiritual seeker, or you're even a total samsari, and you're experiencing, you're seeking ananda, you're seeking wholeness. Or as a spiritual seeker, you're seeking liberation, you're seeking wholeness, fullness, ananda. The sought is the seeker. You can say the hot sought is hidden in the seeker, but it's a bigger hiding than that. Because then you think, oh, it's a little, like a little pea inside the seeker somewhere. The seeker can go inside and find it. Yeah. But really, the sought, you can say the sought is in the seeker, or, but understand the sought is the seeker. Right? What I'm seeking is me. And what a great hiding place. It's a great hiding place because I am the one thing that is always here. I am always here. And because I am always here, this is the secret. Why this Satya Mitya, why this illusion or this hiding is so powerful? Because I am always here as the changeless self to all experience, right? All experience. Look, just taking thoughts in your mind. I am always here as the changeless ground, the clay of the pot, in every single thought, without exception, never wavering at all, I become totally taken for granted because I am the same in every single thought. And so we don't differentiate the very substance of the thoughts. We differentiate between the differences, a happy thought and a sad thought, right? Or this perception or that perception. Or yet this thought modification and then this thought modification, and one, you know, can be differentiated from the other. And one emotion from this emotion from this emotion. But we never notice the constant that is there illumining every single emotion, every single vritti, every single thought modification. There's no change for that at all. And so since that never changes, the mind focuses only on what does change, you know? And because you are the clay of the pot for every single thought that you have, right? You're the very self of every thought that you have. Why shouldn't the mind make this mistake? Why shouldn't your mind say, I am the self? Because when is it not the self? Right? When is the pot not the clay? As long as the pot is there, it is the clay, right? In terms of its being, right? We know, once it's pointed out, well, we would say, well, you know, to the pot. In fact, you really are dependent on the clay for your being. And yes, it's true, you are nothing but clay, but there's a slight difference, and that is this, that the nama-rupa, the name and form that you are identifying with as belonging to the clay, actually the clay is free from. See what I mean? Like imagine if we take a wet clay, just to make it clear, I make a nice pot. And that pot is so proud of itself, it loves itself, its shape, okay? But the clay is wet, and I decide, I think I'll pull it out this way. Okay, now I have another shape. Oh, I think I'll make it into a plate. Okay. Pot changes into bigger pot, into plate, into Tumblr, right? And so what was there prior is displaced. The clay is not displaced, you know? So look at here. The mind, which is only the self, right? It has no other being but the self at all. There's no distance. Itself is the self. The only thing is that the mind is mithya. And that means that it is something subject to change. But while ever it's there, whatever is there is only enjoying the self for its being. You see what I'm saying? So this mind is not going to, there's nothing, of course it's going to say until it recognizes somebody, the Upanishads come along and teach, you know, it's going to feel, I am that self, because that's its experience. So now what it has to recognize, and once it recognizes, it's pretty obvious that actually the mind is something that is illumined, right? The mind is something which is known. The body is something which is known. And this known entity is something that comes into being and goes out of being. One thought comes into being, goes out of being. Next thought comes into being, goes out of being. Body comes into being, goes out of being. All of them are antavantaha. All of them are subject to change. But what never changes is what they really are. What they really are is the self. And that doesn't change. And that, in fact, is our experience. You just have to note it. This is your experience. You are the constant being who is changelessly present as the ongoing me, the timeless presence of me, that is there, present to every experience that you have. And we say, all right, in reference to this body, this me, the self, that is indwelling. Right, Peek? What do I mean by that? Here you are, and you take yourself to be a conscious being. I'm a conscious being. So right away, Krishna is making a distinction there. Yes, you are a conscious being. Now he says something else. You are a conscious being indwelling this body. You are the conscious being who has this body. But the body that you have is subject to death. Okay? It's subject to end. You, the conscious being who are indwelling the body, is not subject to end. It's nityaha. It's free from change. Right? And so not only it's free from change, and it is anashinaha, something which is indestructible. Okay, so we have to make this little jump here. Everything that we experience that can be objectified is destructible. It either destroys itself or somebody else destroys it. Why? Because of time. Everything that you experience is bound by time. It's bound by change. Anything that changes is the destruction of the prior thing. Any moment of change, right? What has changed now means that what was there before is no more. Because it's changed. So the whole nature of the creation is something which is perishable. But the nature of that which is perishable is something that exists within duality. It has to exist within duality to be bound by change. If it's bound by change, it's perishable. Do you see that? Because of time. Time is the great destroyer. So this whole creation is perishable. Why are you not perishable? If yourself, the shariri, the indweller, this indweller, is an object existing within time, then you are perishable also. Because you're not going to be an imperishable item within the creation, and everything else in the creation is perishable. And you're the one non-perishable thing in the creation. That's not how it is. Even in reference to your own body and mind and sense organs, everything about you that you've identified with to be you is perishable, and you know it. And nobody's going to say, oh, no, no, my mind's not perishable. Oh, no, no, my sense organs, they're imperishable. My body, oh yes, my body's imperishable. My moods and emotions, they're imperishable. No, it's the opposite. We know all of them are perishable. All of them are subject to change. That's clear for everybody. It's not a big teaching. Right? Why is the self not perishable? Let's give a simple logic. For something to be perishable, it needs to be something that I can objectify. Why? Because it needs to exist within time and space, to be subject to change. That's what allows it to be perishable. It's an object within time and space and subject to change. Okay? If it's an object to me, then I'm the subject. If it can be objectified and therefore existing in time and space, it's objectified means it's within my awareness. There's a subject-object differentiation there. See that? If it's objectifiable, then who's objectifying it? If I can see it, who's seeing it? If I'm aware of it, who's aware of it? Right? And in fact, all of these perishable items, all of these things that are antavantaha, subject to change, subject to death, are objectifiable. I'm aware of this body. It's a good meditation just to sit and be aware of it. You say, yes, I'm aware of it. I'm aware of my sense organs, whether they work or not. I'm aware of all of the thoughts in my mind. I'm aware of all of my emotions. They all come and go. They're all pramayas. They're all objectifiable. They're all describable. And I can tell you I'm aware of them and I know how they change and I can differentiate my body from your body and my sense organs from your sense organs and my thoughts from your thoughts and my emotions from my emotions and from your emotions. Right? All objectifiable. Is the awareness that is illumining all of these objectifiable parts objectifiable? Can you say, and yes, and look at this awareness that I am? Now, this is an interesting thing. Because you are aware of awareness. But you're not aware of awareness as an object. It's not like your mind is aware of awareness as an object. Awareness, in fact, illumines the mind. Look at this. This is a real... It's not a paradox when you understand it, but you can think of it as a paradox until you understand it. The mind is known. The thoughts are known. That's a fact. Even the I thought is known. They're all objectifiable. Who's objectifying them? Well, you can say they are known, and from the standpoint of the mind, I can say they are known by the awareness. But does that mean that the awareness that is objectifying the mind which is objectified by this awareness, me, right, because I'm there, differentiated from the mind, am I the self that I am, first of all, performing a function of knowing? The mind performs a function of knowing. The sense organs perform a function of knowing. Is the Atman knowing anything? If you get rid of the objectifiable mind and the objectifiable sense organs, what is it that's performing a function of knowing? You've just gotten rid of the mind as objectifiable and the sense organs as objectifiable. So what's performing a function there of knowing? Nothing. There's just the conscious being that you are, awareness, which is itself knowledge, which is itself consciousness, knowledge, knownness, the very conscious being which the objectified mind enjoys. So the mind is now known. The knownness, the consciousness, the self-evident, self-luminous consciousness, which the sense organs enjoy, so that the sense organs are known. The perceptions are known. Everything in the creation that I experience is known. That knownness is always taken back to consciousness. But is this consciousness, which is me, because I'm not going to take myself to be the object, Is this consciousness performing a function? I would say no. It is just the consciousness which is the very being of the mind. And then the mind performs its functions. It is the very being, the conscious being of the sense organs. The sense organs perform their functions. It is the very conscious being of that which is seen, right? Because that which is seen is known, like the painting, like the wall, like the space, like the rug, like all of you, like me. Everything, these things are all known, right? The sense organs are known. The body is known. All of this is taken back to knownness itself, to consciousness itself, your being. Which then we ask, is this being of yours objectifiable? We say, no, who's going to objectify it? Who will objectify it? Does consciousness need to be objectified to be known? No. Why? Because it's consciousness. It is its own experience. The me, yourself, is its own experience. I want you to notice this when you're doing a meditation. What do you do in meditation? You shut down everything, right? You relax your body. You pull in your sense organs. Maybe do pranayama, make your mind quiet. And then you just be, right? Who's lighting you up? This being, your being, is its own knownness. Right? It is consciousness. Nobody is making you aware of you. You're your own, that's what we mean by self-evident. Okay? And so that self-evident consciousness is what we say, aprameya. Aprameya means it cannot be objectified. It is, consciousness is, it is its own experience. But it cannot be known as an object. Some people will misunderstand this, because I've heard people say this. Oh, consciousness cannot be known is not knowable. Yeah, consciousness is not knowable, so we can never know it. Right? It's not knowable, so we can never know it. It's not at all what it means. It means aprameya. Aprameya means cannot be objectified. Right? Cannot be differentiated as an object. I cannot be I can't be objectified because then who would be the subject? So the subject that I am is constant. And how? Because can't be objectified, so not subject to change. That's why nitya. Now, what he says here is, for this shariri, this indweller, for this indweller, singular, for this self, all of these bodies, right, are possessed of an end. Because now look, if my being cannot be objectified to be differentiated as this, 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 and this, how many of me are there? There are many bodies because we're in time and space. Time and space are objectifiable. And so here you are, here you are, here you are. Anything within time and space is infinitely divisible. And even if I say here you are one body, you're infinitely divisible into smaller and smaller parts. You can say, okay, there's 20 people in this room, or there's, 6 billion people on the planet. So many. But how many selves are there? Because if I cannot objectify consciousness because it's not an object, what is going to make it two? How can there be two? What will divide it? Space? Like space divides me from you. I know we have different qualities and whatnot. But just localized, I am different from you. That's our experience. Right? But now, what is going to differentiate consciousness to say I am different from you? All of these things that would be capable of differentiating within the creation are objectifiable. Consciousness is not. So the conscious being that I am, in fact, is the one shariri. The one that indwells this body is the one that indwells this body and this body and this body and the rug and the space. So then we have to really start understanding what they mean by indwelling. And then going back into the previous verse, that one shariri, by which all of this is pervaded, the indweller, the conscious being of this body, is the one by which all of this is pervaded. Right? So the consciousness that I am is the consciousness which is the self of all things. Right? And that consciousness, how can it be the self of all things? It's more like, how can it not be? How can it not be? Because, say, I'm going to just take this example. For each one of us in this room, each one of us has a self. Right? Each one knows exactly what I'm talking about. I am, I am, I am, I am this body. Yes, I'm aware of this body. Yes, the self. I can recognize the constancy. So you know what I'm talking about as a conscious, existent being. But I cannot be objectified and you cannot be objectified. Right? None of us can be objectified. But all of the bodies and the sense organs and the minds and the thoughts and the ahankaras can all be objectified. The space can be objectified. The room can be objectified. And so let's just take this one room. This room is enjoying oneself. You see how it has to be. Right? Because everything that would differentiate you from me is objectified. All the bodies, all the sense organs, all of the minds, all of the thoughts, the ahankara, all of the moods, all of the emotions, all of them objectified. For each one of us, what is left is me, the self. Whose self? Yourself or myself? Our self. So our self, our self, is how many selves?
One.
One self. So now, this one self that is me, okay, does this self have the me experience? Because each one of us says, I am me, and you are you. Like when you sit and you say, I am this body, this the me experience that you can take to be in the form of this body, this me experience, this is what I want to know. Does the me experience belong to the body, or to the sense organs, or to the mind, or to the self? The body experience comes and goes. The thoughts come and go. The sense perceptions come and go. The self remains constant. Who has the me experience? If the me experience goes with a thought, then, when your thought goes, the me has gone. So the me experience that makes me, this very personal me, belongs to who? It belongs to the self, of course. The subject. Me, the subject, not the object. I don't look at a thought and say, oh, there I am. Unless I'm looking in a mirror and I've identified with the body. But I mean, if I'm looking at an object, you know. So the me always resolves into the subject. The I resolves into the subject. Okay, so what does that mean? If this is our self, right? Our self is one self, one me experience, one me experience, and then all of these upadis, all of these conditioning adjuncts, body, 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 all of these different minds, are all enjoying me. And each mind says, I am me, I am me, I am me, I am me. Ishwara says, I am me. Ishwara, the me of Ishwara. There is not a separate, Ishwara doesn't have a different me. There's only one me. So Ishwara can say, I am me. And then all of the beings, that all of the creatures that are within Ishwara, within the infinite creation, will say, no, I am me, I am me, I am me, I am me. And then the creation goes into unmanifest condition, and what's left? Me. Me, you know? Think of it like this. Here I am, me. I go to sleep at night. I have a dream. So I am there. It's my dream, me. Every character enjoys me. The whole dream enjoys me. It's time the alarm clock goes off. The dream goes away. Right? So all those characters are gone. All of those creatures are gone. The whole Ishwara is gone. The one who's identified with the whole dream, gone. Who's left? Me. Was there a death experience? No. That's Satya Mitya. The dream is Mitya. And the whole dream enjoys me, only me. I am the self of the dream. I'm the being of the dream, the self of the dream. There's nothing there but me, really. But of course, the dream is different, and there's all kinds of stuff going on in it. That's the Mitya, right? Mitya in terms of its relationship to me. There's nothing else there but me. But all kinds of stuff is going on, but it has no being apart from me. I am the being. Right? And this being that I am, right, has all these bodies, and all of these bodies are said to be possessed of an end. Are they possessed of an end? There's nothing here but consciousness. That's why it says, are said to be possessed of an end. They're possessed of an end. They come and go. But what are they really? Consciousness. So are they possessed of an end? There's nothing to end. There's nothing here to end. Consciousness isn't possessed of an end. It's not possessed of a beginning. All that is here is consciousness. So where's the end? That's why it's very clever here. Right? It says, antavantaha ime dehaha, you know, uktaha. All of these bodies are said to be possessed of an end. For the shariri, who is nitya, who is free, this indweller, who is free from time, who cannot be objectified, is not objectifiable, apramanasya, right? Who cannot be touched, cannot be destroyed. They're all said to be possessed of an end. True. In a way, true from that standpoint of ajnana, not true from the standpoint of there's nothing really here but consciousness, and consciousness doesn't come to an end. Just think of it. In the dream, there's all these, say the dream, just say this room is a dream. There's all the people in this dream, right? In this nice room and plants and everything. All, this, the whole dream, everything's taking place here. And then the dream ends. Have all these bodies come to an end? Yeah. But has anything really come to an end? There was nothing here apart from consciousness to really come to an end. See what I mean? They do come to an end. But has anything come to an end? No, because what is actually here remains here. That's the Satyam Mitya. And so now, to go back to the meditation, when you say, it's a good meditation to practice, when you sit with yourself and you say, all right, I am this body, just accept the ignorance, okay? I am this body. And let yourself be fully identified with it. Then recognize, focus on the nature of yourself, who you're saying is this body. Say, I am in the form of this body. Then focus on, it's like the clay at the pot saying, you know, I am the pot says, I am the clay, I am the clay. It's true, right? So you say, I am this body, I am the conscious being, okay? I am me. Do that to start so that you can focus on what you mean by me. And then make the differentiation. Okay, we're there. Then make the differentiation. Okay, there's me, and there's this physical body that I'm aware of. And go back and forth between the conscious being that you are and the me, which is the physical body, which is actually you're actually aware of. And see if you can go focus more on the me than the form, to make that differentiation. It's just a little exercise to help you get, to help you, to bring you back home to yourself, to break through these notions of a big me to be discovered. Because a big me to be discovered is the me that I am. Awareness, your being, because it's not an object in the creation, is not big or small. Awareness has nothing to do with size. It has to do with the fact of it being the being of all that is. Size, space, that's all part of Maya. That's why you can have a dream. Do you become the size of the dream? Say you dream. You can dream a whole universe. Does awareness become the size of the dream? I don't think so. I think that the time and space belong to the manifestation of the dream, which has no distance from your being, but your being has nothing to do with size. If you see what I'm saying? If you can work on this with your imagination, imagine a meadow or imagine anything. And your being, that is the self of that imagination, is not changing in size. It has nothing to do with size. And so yourself, there's not a big super self to discover. You have to discover the sanctity of the being that you are, that is here right now, totally. Totally 100% here. Not partially here, not covered in any way, even if you have the most horrible thought. I'm only here when I have good thoughts. Atma, my being, goes into hiding when it flees when I have bad thoughts, and it comes to be with me when I have good thoughts. No. I am the one who is the self of the good thoughts and the bad thoughts. And nothing happens to me. That's the beauty. No matter how terrible the thought is, how hurtful the thought is, or how beautiful and sublime the thought is, I am the truth of that thought, and I'm not touched by it. That's what we have to recognize now my own inner space. If this is not something, you don't have to become anything or go anywhere. You have to recognize this here and now, who you are right now. Has to recognize this reality. All right.
Whoa.
Let's take a minute.
That was beautiful.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamagacchate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.